vote on the 5th. Thanks for inviting me here, Paul, and thank you for coming. I started my career as a poet, and I would love to start these 30 minutes of fame that I get here in Cork by reading a few poems before I start reading from the long book. In 2012, I was invited to the Parnassus Poetry Festival in London, and because of that, I got some poems published in Modern Poetry in Translation. And those translations were done by Victoria Kripp and Sigurður A. Magnússon. New Year's morning. The only ones who have survived the night are a Japanese family who have switched off the neon signs in their heads and made do with the light over the mountains. When the boy breaks the ice film on the lake with his toe, a low crack sounds like the snap of a wing. He catches up with his parents on the bridge, where they quicken their pace. They mean to be safe indoors before darkness reimposes its curfew. Departure. At the end of the ramp, I inadvertently glance back, but you have vanished from view. Beyond the glass, a new day lifts itself off the pavement. The blue of the mountains spread across my mind. As I turn to continue on my way, I trip on my hand. My journey is designed for a bigger woman than me. The plane waits on the runway, and I feel as if the propeller's bitter blades have entered my heart. Night. As you fall asleep, your arms slide apart, no shelter there for me now. The hedges burst and the sea breaks through. I sink through 1,000 fathoms, not one of which in fathoms me. Slowly the seabed subsides beneath the weight of my sleep. Foreboding heads my way, soon it will glide into my dream like a visitation. My husband comes from the countryside, and one of the first arguments we had, am I not supposed to talk about my husband's and my arguments? We have to be open with each other, you know. Yeah. So we had a little fight about where to get buried, as lovers do in their 20s. Try to find something important to fight about. And he's from the countryside, and I gave in, and so we will be buried in his country, and I won't be knowing anybody, and it will be boring for me to be buried there. I decided to give in. I get a lot of stuff in return. So, and yeah. Skagafjörður, I had to write a poem about this. The place is called Skagafjörður. I try to be kind to the children, so they'll tend my grave when the time comes. Crumble biscuits in the grass on my birthday, and recite the poem about the gambling cows, themselves grown old and grey. All the same, I will know them again by the heavenly smell of the stable. May they always be fragrant as the Jesus child. My mother-in-law is always worried about smelling like the stables when she comes into the house, so I was thinking about how baby Jesus would have smelled. Like the animals, I guess. And here's a true story from the countryside called Triumph. The farmer drives gloating through the district, vixen dead on the hood. He laid sheaves to her lair in his jeep, so the animal smelled the stench of petrol, not the man. No one mentions Achilles or Hector, and I know how to hold my tongue. Troy. Battlements rise against the blind sky. The gods have turned their backs on me, They incite against me a mighty army, a frenzied throng of darkness, skin stretched over the heel's hot blood. I whet my weapon on the bones of my foes, then hack off my heel. Draw my knife as the sun sets. Sleep now, I'll woo you a horse. Summer poem. In midsummer, the way between our homes is blocked. The streets snowed up, and neither of us wants to be the first to clear away the snow. I remember that you were not too keen on toy, and I have always been fond of snow. Prayer. Recall you still before going to bed. Sometimes I say a prayer that only includes you and dreams about a tiny boat. Recall you also when wetting the knife. Know that the shortest way to a man's heart goes straight through his chest. In 2010, I decided to publish a book called Bloodhoof. I rewrote an old epic poem. The poem can still be read in a manuscript from the 13th century. From the second half of the 13th century, we had these monasteries at that time where monks didn't have anything else to do than slaughter white calves so that they could write our sagas and our poems on their skins, on the skin. Yeah, so you can imagine the joy when a white calf was born. You knew that you can start writing, continuing your story. And yeah, we still have these manuscripts, and that's our most important heritage in Iceland, the sagas and the epic poetry. And the epic poetry tell us the stories about the old Nordic gods. You probably know some of them. Odin is the chief god. Freya is the goddess of love. And we are very much proud of Thor, because he's a big star in Hollywood now. He's in the movies with Hulk and Iron Man. Strange company for a heathen god, but he's there. He's famous, and that's good. And there's only one story about the fertility god called Freyr, and that's the story that I rewrote. And it's called Skirnir's Journey in English, and it's about Freyr, who doesn't have anything to do. And as the Smiths sang when I was a teenager, the devil will find work for idle hands to do. So Freyr is roaming around the world of the gods, and he takes a seat at Odin's throne. And that throne is just like the furniture of IKEA. It has a name, Hliðskjálf. And Freyr should not have taken a seat there, because it's not his throne. And from that place, Odin can see the whole wide world. It works just like Google Earth, actually. And Freyr sees into the world of the giants. This world is divided into a few places, you know, world of the gods and the giants. And Vanir is a special kind of beings that no one understands really. And the world of the dead, and the world of the humans. And Frey sees into the world of the giants, where this beautiful creature, a beautiful woman, is living. And in this old poem, it says that he finds her so beautiful that to him it is as if her palms are shining. And I love that description of a beautiful woman. I mean, it would be come handy in a dark bar that when you would need somebody's attention and you'd have some beams out in the eyes of the one that you're interested in. and that's what she can do. And Freyr cannot forget that woman. And he stops speaking and he stops eating. This is way before people invented compost eating. And there you can see how Nordic men reacted when they had troubles on their mind. They just stopped speaking and eating. They were not talking about their problems or slamming doors or doing something useful. And finally, it's his mother, of course, that gets worried, not his father or anybody else. No, the mother gets worried. So she asks his servant, Freyr's servant, called Skirnir, what's wrong with him? And there comes finally the explanation. Freyr has seen this giant woman and he can't forget her. So Freyr asks Skirnir to go into the world of the giants and get her. And Skirnir is a clever boy. He sees this as a big business opportunity and he says, I will go if you get your horse and your sword. And these two things are mainly status symbols. And Freyr just says yes without thinking. So Freyr goes into the world of the giants, finds Gerdr, that's the name of the woman, and asks her to come with him. And she says no, and he tries to bribe her. He says, I will give you gold apples. And she says, no, the gold apples are important. It's the apples of Eden. The gods eat those apples so they get eternal life. And he asks, and then Skirnir wants to give her jewelry, and she says, no, my father is rich, I don't have to accept your jewelry. And so he changes his tactic and he starts threatening her, and the rhythm of this old poem completely changes. And some scholars say that he's actually using magic to get what he wants. So this is some kind of a Viking Harry Potter. And he threatens her with all sorts of violence. He's going to kill her. He's going to kill her whole family. And she says, no, I'm not coming. And then he says, no one will fall in love with you. You will always be alone. You will become terribly skinny and you will become a lesbian. Skinny lesbians, that was a real threat in Viking times. Yeah, and I read this over and over trying to find something serious that we can actually, in the year of 2010, take seriously. And well, he says, you will always look straight into hell if you won't come with me. So that would be depression to me. So in the end, she says, yes, I will come. And I will come in 9 nights, she says. And in the last verse of this old poem, it's Freyr who gets to speak, and he says that he's talking about how difficult it is for him to have to wait for such a long time. And that's the end of the poem. We never get to know what happens when Freyr and Gerdr meet, if it is romantic and beautiful. And so I wanted to find out what happens when they meet. I wanted Gerdr to say goodbye to her mother, a person that is never mentioned in the old poem. Her father is there because he's a serious threat to Skirnir on his way to this world of the giants. And I wanted to know what Gerdr does during those 9 nights. What is he? Is he packing her bags or what is he doing? And the strange thing about this poem is that it has always been considered as a love poem. The fact that Freyr gives his servant the sword is serious, because when the world comes to an end, Ragnarök as it's called, when the world comes to an end, Freyr is the first of the gods to die. The giants will kill him because he doesn't have his sword. But he doesn't know that when he gives his sword to Skirnir. So it's so I decided to read this in a rather feministic way and say this, write this poem from the point of view of Gerdr. And I started thinking about this character Gerdr because I carry the same name as her. And I guess I've been thinking about this since an early age. At least when I wanted to celebrate that I was finished with my first novel, I decided to get myself a tattoo, and I got the sword of Freyr on my leg here. And this does not mean that I'm going I'm willing to see your tattoos afterwards. Yeah, but this is my sort. So that was the idea behind this poem. And the poem is written as a play. There's the names of the characters that are speaking in each verse. That's how the old poem was written. And people believe that the Vikings played this. They had the roles of these characters, and this was a real play, a theater. And they played this before people were married. Skirnir is supposed to be the sun, Freyr is the fertility god, and Gerdr is supposed to be the earth. So that was what it was all about. So I'm going to read a little piece in Icelandic so that you will know how my language sounds. And then I will read from Rory McTurk's translation. Blófótnir. Minningar. Snjór sem ég þjappa í greip, hnoða í kúlu og kasta. Það hendir aðeins í huga mér. Hér festir ekki snjó. Brúin spennist úr iðandi grasi í gráan mökk. Þar landið mitt. Vafið náttkyrri værð, steift í stálkaldan ís. Hér situr tungl yfir dölum og ám, heima yfir hrolldjúpum gljúfurum. Ég sökti önli í vorstilt vatn, skía flekar flutum heiminn, sólin í djúpinu kveikti glit í gárum. Það glampaði á augum mín í vatninu og festi náðum háls mér, festi úr föður ást. Blóðrúð. Memories. Snow which I press in my hands, knead into a ball and throw, but only in my mind. Snow does not settle here. The bridge reaches out from waving grass into smoky gray cloud. There is my country, wrapped in calm of night, steeped in steel cold ice. Here the moon watches over valleys and rivers, in my homeland, over chasms of dizzying steepness. Down went my fishhook into water calmed by spring. Rafts of cloud floated through the sky. The sun in the depths lit a glitter in the ripples, illumining my eyes in the water and the chain round my neck. Father's love in each link. A spawner was sporting in my image, reflected in the still water, no sooner in one ear than out the other. Then came a knee, a whinny through the woods. Birds fell silent, mice ran for cover. At noon fell a darkness, as if sand were blowing over hill and dale, settling on leaf and lean. Skirnir, the shining one, fixed me with his gaze. His horse of ample stature stood with head held high, dark of hue, as if hewn from darkness. His mane a sunlit field, his tail a sheaf of corn, of dark glass were the envoy's eyes, but the smile brought to mind my brothers. They would be waiting for the fish to boil. To them I would tell the story of the steed. With its sturdy build, its depth of breast, its breadth of air, its length of loin, the clattering of hooves on the slabs of rock was like breaking of bones. Skirnir's voice rose over dust-covered trees. The god Freyr stole into Odin's throne. Looking over all worlds, his eye fell on me. My palms shone bright as his longing grew. His love had gone reeling in mad career. Not eating, not speaking, you would find no rest. What was awaited now was a bride, from giant land on horseback, through where to ride. No, I would stay, I chose to remain in the place where I knew every cranny and creek, and the rivers ran through my every vein. Skirnir spun a tale of a land of sweet calm, with a leafy branched forest, bearing apples of gold. Would I care for a bite? No, I would. It would only stick fast in my throat. What Skirnir then offered to me was a ring, but of rings from a finger's a finery tool, I had had gifts in full from a father. A howl then resounded through the mist-hung thicket. The voice grew into an angry hiss, and there came a crack in the glass of those eyes. Love had indeed come armed to the teeth, with an envoy brandishing a hate-infused sword, its haft carved in cruelty. Over my head the sword sang a song, the song of a maiden who struggles and dies, her neck decked with a slash. The sword sang still further, of young men who die with pain for their pillow, in sheets lined with fear. Of fathers with stumps where their hands should have been, branches driven into gaping wounds, of eyes torn from sockets and thrown to dogs. My penalty to dwell alone and loveless on an eagle's perch, with my gaze towards Her, the abode of death, towards the barren land of the dead, towards Her, its queen evil and ancient, her face half eaten away with hatred, her mouth a gaping grave, and issuing from it the baleful wailing of the lost and mourned. Into my heart she struck surrender, mocking me the while. With rapid bounds, three bitches caught me fast in their teeth. Sorrow, solitude, suffering. Threats came falling like hail from the sky. No one would come to pay me a visit, save a monster with three heads. My days would amount to logs in a pile. Skirnir called out to my people, to the gods, so that none knew not of my wretched state. Terror took hold in my innermost parts, spreading out, weighing heavy, a boulder breaking its bounds. I said yes, I would come, and I saw my face, dead, reflected in the envoy's sword. Nine nights worth of fear, one night after the other, each worse than the last. My brothers and father welcomed this gift of life. Joy resounded through forests, settling on trees, delving into moss. The moon launched its drafts in the vault of darkness. I let myself fall in a heap in the grass, burrowed into the earth, descending. The descent roaring in the portals of my ears. I dived deep under rocks, then sprang from gullies, walked over stretches of ice hard as iron, skin wasting away, flesh bruised and broken from crushing of bones. My eyes peered ahead, flickering like fish. I committed to memory cliffs and peaked crags, snowflakes in my hand. When the ninth night came, the stars no longer knew the stations. In the midst of the darkness, my mother enfolded me in her arms, conjured me to appear before her once more, in a shape that glided from under a rock in the midst of a forest at dawn. By break of day, the envoy had come. He hustled me into the back of the hack. Beneath me the world went a-rocking. My country yielded to this horse, cleared the way for its springboard, its leap, for its desperate hoof-kicking ride. The night was naught but a river's deep pool into which to plunge. The darkness a crust enclosing my heart, the blaze on the horse's head a beacon that gleamed. Over landslide we rode, weighted waves of blood. So, this was the piece I was mainly going to read for you. And I will be staying here, and if you have some questions, you can come to me and ask me if you've got something that you believe that I can explain better. So, thank you for listening.